Hey guys, Melissa here. I blog at our family website, www.thecorkums.com, which we affectionately call the Corkboard. This is the Uncorked Podcast. If I had to choose a descriptor for our family, it would be outside the box. Whether it's adopting three unrelated adolescents out of birth order, or trying to run a coffee shop in our quote-unquote spare time right after adopting, we love adventure. We had to give up that coffee shop, and our three oldest kids are launched for now. But with lots of extended family living at home and a full-time wellness business, there still aren't many dull moments. We've met so many amazing people with fascinating stories along our journey. I'd love to introduce them to you. Welcome to episode 10 of the Uncorked Podcast. This week, I bring to you a story of loss and heartache, but also hope and redemption. I always count it a blessing when we can look back at a story and see God's providence playing out. My guest this week is Erin Gang, and she shares her story of infertility, pregnancy loss, and adoption. I know you'll appreciate her authenticity and honesty. We also chat about husbands, who I think are often overlooked and forgotten in the infertility conversation.
All right. Well, welcome to the Uncorked Podcast, Erin. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be here.
So at the end of every interview, I always ask folks off the air who else they know who has a kind of everyday extraordinary story that I can invite to be on the show. And way back in episode one, I was talking to Karen Harris, and she mentioned you as one of her people who has an extraordinary story. And of course, you and I already know each other, and so I was in full agreement with her. And so again, I'm really glad that you're here and willing to kind of share a little bit of your heart with us.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I'm happy to do it.
So tell us a little bit about just who makes up your world, who are you, like, who are your people, what do you do with your days, all those things.
Okay, well, I am a wife and a mother of two children on earth and a lover of Jesus. I'm a homeschooler, stay-at-home mom. My son is 9 and my daughter is almost 5. She'll be 5 at the end of December. And we have a dog. It's also part
They're
of our
fine.
Family. So, our days are made up of schooling and a lot of activities. Right now, my son is in a hip-hop dance class that I'm waiting on him to get out of. And, we're kind of just running around and doing a lot of things this school year that we haven't done in the past. And it's actually been a lot of fun.
And he was in a show recently. I was watching your social media feeds. So tell me about theater and where you're doing that and all of those things.
Jamie, my son, he has been begging us to do theater or some type of acting for years, probably since he was 5. And finally this year I researched it a bit, and he did a couple camps this summer, and he just did a show, The Little Mermaid Junior, and he was great. I know I'm his mom, but I thought he was really good. And he had a great role. He was one of Ursula's eels. And he just did a really great job. And he's very happy. He is fully himself when he is rehearsing and when he's on stage and when he's finished. And he just really comes alive. And I can see a lot of joy in him when he is doing that. So it's been a great addition to our activities.
That's so fun. Did he get any, like, stage fright or anything like that, or was he totally, like, rocking it?
He was nervous, but it was a good adrenaline. It wasn't anything that froze him at any point. And, in fact, in the second show, he even put more into it than he did in the first show, because they did two identical shows in the same day. And we're just really proud of him.
That's a big deal. Two shows in one day is, like, not easy. That's a lot on kids. Is this like a youth theater? Are all the people kids, or are there like adults too?
It's all children, but it's all ages. So the lead was 16 years old, and the youngest actor was 6 years old. So they can play a lot of different parts with that wide age range.
Yeah, that's so fun. I think Mia would probably really enjoy that. Not that we have room for anything else in our life, but she loves the stage. She's kind of like a fish in water when she's on stage, and it's really fun to watch. And it sounds like Jamie's kind of that way, too.
Well, I was that way, and I have to be careful that I'm not living my dream through him because I did act a bit in high school, just in high school plays, but I wanted to take it further, and I just, for many reasons, did not have the opportunity to do that. So I'm thrilled that he loves it in a selfish kind of way, I guess you could say.
I mean, you totally have time to go back and do community theater as an adult, Erin. I mean, I know you have two kids that are in all the things, but I think you should just do it.
Many, many, many years ago, Timmy, my husband, he told me that I should go do it. But I don't think, I think we did have Jamie at that point. But I was just like, I can't go back in time.
Maybe once all the kids are out of the house, you can go back and reclaim your dream to be on stage. I mean, there really are a ton of community theaters in our area. I think you could do it.
I know. Possibly.
I know some people. Erin, I know some people. I'm going to hook you up. We're going to get you on the stage.
Okay. And never
say never. And besides, that'll be another Everyday Extraordinary thing, and you'll have to come back and tell us about it.
Oh, my word. But I'll be famous then, so I might require a fee or something.
Okay. Well, just remember that you probably got your start with me. So
yes.
Keep that in mind. I might get a discount. So I want to go back to when you were introducing your family, and you mentioned that you have two children here on Earth. And so I know that that means that you have some other children in your heart. And so tell us a little bit more about that experience and how many other children you count in your family.
Sure. When I was in high school, I actually got diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome. And so I knew, even though I was a child, that eventually it wasn't going to be cut and dry for me to have children. And so after Timmy and I got married, you know, we decided we wanted to start a family, and it wasn't happening, but we weren't surprised. It just ended up being a much harder, longer journey than I had ever thought that it would be. So we did the very basic thing that any doctor will do with a woman who's having difficulty after some testing, and they just gave me a pill called Clomid, hoping that I would then ovulate and make a baby with my husband at home, but that never happened. And so we decided to jump right to IVF, in vitro fertilization, which is the most invasive infertility treatment you can have. And our first try worked, and we had Jamie. And we were thrilled, and we thought to ourselves, well, gosh, that wasn't really that hard. This is just the way we'll have kids, no big deal. And we had discussed that we wanted a larger family, 4 to 6 children. We wanted the noise and the slamming of doors and the laughter and the chaos and all of that joy that a larger family can bring. And so when Jamie was created, there were 10 other embryos or their babies that were created as well. And so after Jamie was a year and a half, I think, we went back and started trying again. And every single cycle that we did failed. So I didn't become pregnant again in that cycle of embryos that were made when Jamie was made. I know it sounds complicated.
So did you do that with all 10 of your frozen embryos?
Yes. Yep. Sometimes when I was transferred with Jamie, I was transferred with the embryo that was Jamie and one other embryo and just had Jamie. So I had 2 the first time. But there were times when I had up to 3 embryos transferred at once. And sometimes just one, sometimes two, but I was never pregnant again with that batch, if you want to call it that. And so at that point is when we started discussing adoption and what that would look like for our family, because I am an only child and I didn't ever want to have one child. Like I had said previously, we wanted a larger family to begin with, but being an only child myself, I was just not going to allow, if it was in my control, Jamie to be an only child. So at that point, I had stopped working after Jamie was born, and so we didn't have this amazing health insurance that had paid for all these extremely expensive treatments, you know, tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, it's worth crazy. I have a really good friend, actually due any day now, and for her baby shower, we did, in lieu of favors, a donation, and she actually picked a nonprofit who kind of helped families kind of navigate that process and navigate it financially. And it is a daunting undertaking and an emotional undertaking as well. So like, what did that look like for you just in those cycles, and how long did you do that before you decided to start talking about adoption?
We did, I always forget the exact number because it was a traumatic part of my life. So the details and exact numbers and times of things become unclear to me, a bit cloudy. But I believe that with the 11 embryos, we had 7 cycles. So I went in 7 times for transfers. I'm pretty sure that's correct. And so what that means is that I'm giving myself shots in my stomach with a smaller needle every day. And then Timmy or my mother would come give me an intramuscular shot in my tush. I believe that was every day too. And this would happen over I'm so far removed from it that I'm not remembering all of the numbers, but I think that's over a 2-week period, because the first 2 weeks they induce a cycle. So they give you medication, a hormone called progesterone, to make you do what your body should be doing by itself. And then when that part's over, they switch you to the injections. And so this causes physical issues like bloating. And I remember when I actually was pregnant with Jamie, I looked, even though he was my first, I looked much further along than I actually was, because the drugs just do that to your midsection. And emotionally, when I was doing it with Jamie, I would say that it was not very difficult because I didn't know what I was in for. I was only full of hope. I was not jaded. I just thought, hey, it's going to work, and it did. Now, the subsequent cycles that we went in for and all of the negative results that we were getting, it started to take a toll on me emotionally, and a toll on Timmy for sure. There are a lot of ugly issues that go along with infertility, like jealousy of other women, your friends who are getting pregnant. Of course, everybody's getting pregnant in their late 20s and early 30s. That's what everybody in the whole world is doing. And so there are baby showers, and there are baptisms, and there are first birthday parties that I had no interest in attending. And I gave myself permission just to not attend. And I think that there were people that were full of grace towards me in those situations, and I think there were people that didn't understand and looked at it as a very selfish move, but it was self-preservation time. I was grieving and mourning the loss of the family that Timmy and I dreamed of having.
Yeah, so let me ask a question. As someone who has never been on the infertility emotional roller coaster, what is the most helpful thing when you're doing that. And there's birthday parties and baptisms. As a, for your friends and as you being you, like, was it more helpful for your friends to invite you and leave the ball in your court, or would you rather just not know?
Always more helpful to be invited. And also, when very much along those same lines, as my friends and family members were trying to have children and being pregnant and making those announcements, it was always better for me to know that they were trying to get pregnant if they were willing to share that information. You know, some people are very open about that and some people aren't. And then when they get that positive result, to tell me in private instead of me seeing it on Facebook. Instagram wasn't really a thing at that point. And I had a lot of people that were super kind to me in that way and would call me privately and let me know that they were pregnant or tell me that they were trying so that I didn't have to find out, like, in a group setting or in a on a social media setting, because when I felt like I was kind of kept in the loop, even though it stings, I felt like I was part of it and that I wasn't trying to be kept away, or they nobody was trying to hide from me, and that was better for my heart.
Yeah, I love that. I love that in between of, I mean, you, because you still want to be friends with people and you still want to love people, but that opportunity to really do it in a closer relationship, hear from your friends, even though they have news that is hard for you to digest, but for you to be able to digest, you know, have it more on your terms and be able to kind of grieve the paradigm of, or that, not the paradigm, the paradox of that whole situation.
Right.
And kind of, yeah, just recognize your grief and recognize their joy, kind of all in the same breath. So,
yeah.
All right, so go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, to have full disclosure and be very honest, especially because I am 99.9% emotionally on the other side now. I don't know if that lasts. Tenth of a percent is ever going to go away. But it's not, I wasn't always happy for people. I wasn't like, oh, I'm happy for you, I'm just sad for me. Sometimes I just wasn't happy. And I think that anybody listening to this that is suffering on this path, it's just good to know that it's an emotion that happens when you have infertility, and you can't just lay with your husband the way God designed and have children and be fruitful and multiply. You know, it's devastating. It's devastating. And so I wasn't happy for people when they were pregnant, and but sad for myself. I was just like, I can't deal. And as we moved forward in our journey and became comfortable and content, I am in a much different place now where I'm happy to hold somebody's newborn, or I'm excited for someone. And I thankfully also, because I'm getting older and I'll be 40 next year, most people aren't having babies anymore. So that in my life, you know. So that makes it easier a bit for us, and by us, I mean Timmy, included in that. Yeah, it's just, there's some really, really ugly sides to the whole thing.
Yeah, thanks for being so honest, because I think those are those emotions that no one talks about, because they do feel ugly, but they're so real and they're so human. And I think I would venture to guess that women walking through infertility have all been there. And our emotional journey through things is a journey also. And so I love that you can be there and know that you were there and know where God's brought you over the years. And I think there's probably women out there that are listening to that and being like, thank you. Like, I'm not alone. You know, thanks for just putting that out there that happened.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. And in that time of when we were trying and trying and trying and trying, it is when I felt closest to Jesus in that suffering. I never was mad at God, although that is a very common and emotion and a, you know, valid emotion that no one should feel guilty about having. I just was never mad at God. I was just so, so, so sad. But I just felt the Lord holding me all of the time through the entire journey. And there's no way that I could have dealt with myself without Jesus by my side.
Yeah. So what happened after Jamie and all those cycles? Because we know that you have two kiddos now. So what happened between them and how did that all play out?
Sure. So we decided that we were going to look into adoption, and we knew that we wanted to do it domestically and that we wanted a newborn because we were adopting, you know, to fill a loss and a hole in our family. So we wanted to start from, in our minds at the time, from scratch, right? So very, very naive about the entire process of adoption and the triad of birth families and child and adoptive parents. So we began our research, and now I'm drawing a blank space because we stopped and decided to go back to infertility treatment. And I don't completely remember why we decided to stop pursuing adoption and go back, but that is ultimately what we did. And at the time, we did not have the financial resources to fund a fresh cycle of in vitro because we were not covered by health insurance for that at that time. So I had worked in the school system. I was a teacher, classroom teacher, and I needed to get back into the school system only for health insurance. I did not want the responsibilities of being a classroom teacher. I wanted to do the absolute minimum because I had Jamie at home who was 3 years old, and I had never spent time away from him. And here I was going to go back to work only for health insurance to give him a sibling. So what I ended up doing was being an instructional assistant in the public school system for a class of autistic middle school boys, and I got my health insurance. And I went right back. I actually switched doctors, and I went right in at the beginning of the school year, starting a fresh cycle. And we did that, and we ended up with 4 embryos that time, and that is because there are different rates of growing the embryos that the doctors will do, and our new doctor decided to take a more aggressive route and grow the embryos to a bigger stage called a blastocyst, which gives them a better chance of making it, but also is going to leave you with less embryos, if that makes sense, because they're all not going to make it to the blastocyst stage in the dish. So we got pregnant the first time, and we were absolutely ecstatic, and it was unbelievable, you know, that I was pregnant. And I had a dream very early on. Actually, it wasn't a dream. I woke up in the middle of the night and had a vision of a pink neon sign that said, "It's a girl." And this was like a couple weeks after I found out that I was pregnant. And so I knew that God was telling me that I had a girl. And we named her Lucy, Lucy Evelyn Rose. And everything was fine and great. And we were just plugging away. And then we had that 20-week sonogram, which is just supposed to be for fun and giggles and memories and all of that fun, lighthearted stuff. Well, we went into the sonogram, and the sonographer was very quiet. And she said, "I can't really see the gender of your baby because the baby's legs are crossed." And we said, "Okay." And she left the room, and she asked me to walk around a little bit and try to get the baby to move. So I did. And she came back and she said, "I'm sorry, I still can't get the gender." So we left feeling very angry and confused. It didn't make sense to us. And about 45 minutes after we had gotten home, I got a call from my midwife. And she said that the baby had a lot of anomalies, just the most random things. Everything was not right with this baby. At that point, I decided that I wanted to go back to my OB because I had planned to have my birth at a birthing center and be all natural about it. And I wanted to just go back to my OB at this point. So I called my OB and got everything sent to him. And, you know, he sent me to get a sonogram at a hospital. Anyway, to make an extremely long, complicated story short, this baby was not going to live. And so the reason they couldn't see the gender was because every part of her body was swollen. It's called hydrox, like every part of her body. And so she only had a two-chambered heart. She had organs in the wrong spot. There was just nothing good about this situation. And a couple of days later, after church, she was kicking a whole bunch, like so much to the point where Timmy had like time to walk across the room and come feel her kick. And then the next day, I didn't feel her move at all. And I knew she was gone. I just knew she was gone. Just a mother knows. So I went right into my OB and he did a sonogram and she was gone. And they still didn't know that my baby was a girl, but I did, because God had told me so many months before that she was a girl. And I believe that he did that so that I could just have extra bonding time with her, like actually knowing who she was. So anyway, I was induced and I went through an entire full labor and I delivered her. And I held her, and the hospital photographer came in, and we took pictures, and my parents were there, and I had some visitors come before I had her, but after I had her, it was just my parents, so they could see her. And I left the hospital the same day I had her with an empty baby blanket.
That's just heartbreaking. I can't even imagine that. And I remember bits and pieces of that story because we were homeschooling in the same community when you guys were walking through that and you were working. So I spent, you know, more time with Jamie and your mother-in-law. But I just can't even. My heart was so broken for you guys. I just can't even imagine.
It was a very, very, very difficult time. I mean, obviously it was, and that's putting it lightly. You can't really put something like that into words. You know, the loss of a child is horrendous at any stage, and to have been trying to get pregnant for so long and then to lose the child is just, you know, more than you would think that someone could bear. But we did bear it. And after Lucy, we got pregnant two more times with the same batch in which she was created. And we lost those babies very early on, which I was grateful for, because I said, God, if I'm not going to keep these babies, please take them now. Don't take them months from now. Please just take them now, because I didn't want to go through that again. So I had earlier term miscarriages. But if I can just back up for a second, 6 weeks postpartum after Lucy, I was cleaning my house and I hemorrhaged, and Timmy had to call 911 and I had to go get an emergency DNC because there was a little piece of her placenta that did not come out. And yeah, it turned into a bit of a medical emergency. And so that was another trauma added on to the loss of her, and just really, really brought out some major anxiety and panic disorders that were lurking in my DNA and were now fully present and are still fully present to this day. So it really turned our lives completely and totally upside down. But after we had tried all of the other embryos and we lost all of them, this batch all through miscarriage or with Lucy a still birth, we decided we were finished trying to get pregnant. We were just completely finished. So we fully pursued adoption. Actually, We pursued adoption with one embryo left. I actually had a miscarriage after we adopted Emily. That's how that went. All the things get mixed up because there's so much.
It's a lot. Quite
yes,
a journey.
It is a lot. So we decided to pursue adoption, and basically we only knew that we were going to do infant domestic adoption. We didn't know anything else. We didn't have an agency. We didn't know how to start our home study. We just knew that that was what we were going to do. So we started to do a little bit of research, and we decided that the first thing that just had to happen is we needed to get a home study done. And we wanted to do it quickly. And we knew that a home study process takes at least 3 months to adopt a baby, you know, within the United States. So we weren't thinking that it was going to be a quick process, but we wanted to do everything we could do on our end. So they call it the paper pregnancy, right? So you have thousands of pieces of paperwork to fill out, fingerprints, background checks, you have to go to the doctor. It's just endless. So we took days at a time and made tons of appointments, got a sitter for Jamie, and would do massive amounts of things in one day. Like, we would take an entire day and do things. And so one day, the county health inspector had just left our house, because that's part of the process, you have to have the fire marshal and the health inspector come. And just as an aside, we were already raising a child. We had a three-year-old little boy who was very healthy and happy and, you know, smart as a whip and all of this. And they're saying things to us like, you need to put a lock on your basement door. And okay, and these are the things that you have to do, right? But it is hard to take when you believe and you know that you're a good parent, and somebody comes in and says, well, you need to fix this and this and this and this. You know, your hot water heater's too hot. But it's all part of the process. So it's just emotionally draining. And so
it is. I actually failed the parent test, Erin. I failed the parent test to adopt Ty. I had to take special classes.
Oh my
okay,
goodness.
I hear you. But anyway, so you were taking classes.
It's crazy. So the health inspector had just left, and Jamie was out of the house. I believe he was with Tammy's mom, actually. And we were writing our biographies. You have to write your whole life story. And I got a phone call from my friend Melissa Corkum.
So I know her.
She called me. So you called me and you said, I have this friend who has a daughter that she adopted, and her daughter's birth mother just had another baby. What do you say? And so this is not a conventional way, right, that domestic adoption typically happens. Usually you are doing a home study for 3 months. You make a book of you and your family, basically to try to sell yourself to a birth family. And you wait and you wait and you wait and you wait to be picked by a birth family. And then you meet the birth family, and, you know, it's so long, and you wait for the baby to be born. Very long process. Well, you called us and said, there's a little girl in the hospital, and here's the woman's phone number. And it all gets really complicated because it's Emily's birth sister's adoptive mother who you gave us the contact for, because she was in contact with the birth mother. So I'm not going to get into a whole lot of details at this point, because it's Emily's story, and it's also her sister's story, and I just, you know how that is. But we went to the hospital the next day, and at that point, there's a lot of details in there, but I'm going to fast forward a little bit and just say that our home study ended up getting expedited. So instead of taking 3 months, it took 3 weeks, and Emily came home to us. We met her on January 10th, and she had an extended hospital stay, and she was released and went to the adoption agency's interim care family, because we still had home study paperwork to finish. And so she was there for a week, and we FaceTimed with that family and with Emily every day. And then on February 1st, she came home. So we met her on January 10th, did not have a complete home study. And on February 1st, she was in our house, home with us. And that was it. That was, now we had our two children, and it was just a complete whirlwind of blessing and answered prayer and excitement, and my dear friends at my house whipping a nursery up and planning a baby shower and all of these things happening at once while Emily was born already in the hospital getting well. And there we were with a daughter at home.
God's hand is just so all over that story. And I know there are so many details, and it was not an uncomplicated process to make all those ducks fall in a row. And just the fact that they all did, and at the end you can say, and we got to take Emily home, is just so beautiful. And she's a girl, which is not insignificant in light of Lucy's story. And I am super blessed to have played a little role in that. But I just can see God's hand in so many places across that. And so what a beautiful story that she'll have to carry and treasure, and just what a blessing to be able to see God's hand. Because sometimes we look back, or sometimes in the moment, we don't always see where God's hand is playing out in our stories. And I just always count it a huge blessing when we can identify his fingerprints in a story. And so she is gifted with all of those things. And, you know, just a really, you know, it's kind of like a made-for-Hollywood movie story, really.
It is. It really is. It is quite fairy tale as far as the adoption world goes. And it wasn't all rainbows and unicorns, as you know, believe me. But the end result is just God, you know, tangible Jesus. There's another really just miraculous piece in that story. So I had Lucy in March 13th of 2012. And Emily was born on December 30th. And if you do that math, Emily was conceived in March of 2012. And so Lucy's due date was August 4th. And so I ended up having my baby girl just a couple months later than I thought I would, right? So I thought I would have a baby girl in August of 2012, but I had a baby girl in December of 2012 who was conceived the month I delivered Lucy. So it's completely divine, and I don't take that lightly. And it's good, actually, because Emily's almost five now, and it's good to talk about it again and just really remember those details. Because when I feel, you know, far from God, or I'm going through a big trial, which I happen to be right now, which has nothing to do with infertility, but I am in a very low spot right now in my life, to remember how God literally just picked me up and carried me and my husband and even Jamie, and just handed us a baby when we were so heartbroken and desperate to grow our family is more than someone can ask for.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. So I know that you're coming to a close on dance class. So in closing, two things. One, what would you say as encouragement to women walking where you've walked? And two, what would you say, because you mentioned it a couple times, how hard this was for Timmy. And I think that's probably a piece that we don't talk about quite as often, because I think women just we're a lot more verbal with our feelings. And so it's obvious. We know that when a couple walks through infertility, it's really hard on the mom. So two questions. One, what is your encouragement? And then two, just what would you say as a word, what would you say about the husband?
My first piece of encouragement to any women suffering through infertility is to find other people, other women that are going through the same thing. And over the years, I have been, have had women referred to me through people to talk about infertility. And I've talked to several people, you know, who are currently walking through it to encourage them. So that's the first thing, is I would say, if you can't find it in real life, then find it online. There are, you know, treasure troves of groups that you can find online. Ultimately, it would be best to find an actual real life human being. But you can, your needs, your emotional needs, I do believe can be met by doing something, you know, through social media, finding a group, because you have to have somebody that understands what it feels like. And you may have these wonderful women in your life, but if they have never experienced infertility or loss, it's just not going to fill that emotional need that we have, those of us that are going through it. So that would be my number one recommendation, is to find someone or a group that is dealing with what you're dealing with. And you know, there are things that would drive me crazy that people would say. You know, there's a whole lot of things that people say that are not encouraging at all, like hang in there, or you know, there's next time, and all of just these. And the thing is that people don't mean any harm. Nobody knows what to say. You don't know what to say or do. Sometimes I'll be talking to somebody and I don't know what to say, and I've been through it. So just take people and what they're saying to you with a grain of salt. They don't understand. They want to love and help you, and they just don't know how. Also, give yourself permission to skip those events that might be painful to you, like we were talking about earlier, the baptisms, the first birthday parties, the baby showers, whatever. And know Jesus Christ as your Savior. The second question you asked me is kind of about the husbands, and I would just say that this is one of the things that people lose their marriages over. It's like one of those big top three things that marriages can end over. Because Timmy and I have God between us, it brought us closer at the end of it. Now, there were times where we were not close, but we persevered. And I just would encourage these mamas, and I do call them mamas, even if they don't have a child yet, because they are mothers in their hearts, to not forget about your husband, that it's hard for him too, that he's grieving as well, that he feels helpless, that if all he wants to do is fix it and he can't. But just remember, it's a journey between the two of you. Have a lot of communication. Tell him how you're feeling. Ask him how he's feeling. Don't go through times where you're just silent, because that's when the hurt can really have room and time to grow.
I love that. I don't know, whatever you said, it just made me tear up. Beautiful, and I appreciate you and Timmy so much in your journey and your perseverance through some really, really tough times that are all the top things that marriages die over. You've pretty much done them all. So thank you so much again for taking some time, for spending your free hour with me, and for sharing your story. And I am positive there are people out there who are listening and just needed to hear what you had to say, and super grateful.
Well, thank you for so much for having me on. It was definitely my pleasure, and you know, my prayer would just be that, like you said, somebody that needs to hear this will hear it and will feel encouragement, and just that you're not alone, because you are not alone.
Hey, where can people find you on social media? I know you're an Instagram hangout person. Can people find you there if they're looking for a shoulder walking through this journey?
Yes. My Instagram is Timmy and Erin. All one word, TimmyAnderIn. I'm on Facebook as Erin Patricia. I'm not super active on Facebook, but I do scroll around. I'm much more active on Instagram.
All right. Well, I'll put a link to that on the show notes page too. And again, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Melissa. Thank you.
Wow, aren't you just blown away by Aaron's story? That was really my first time hearing all of the details and the twists and the turns and the losses and the ways that she felt God's presence in her story. I just stand in awe of her braveness, not to just walk through her story, but to share it with others and to be open to rewalking that journey with others who need someone who just gets it. Do you know someone who needs to hear Aaron's story? Maybe you just know someone who needs permission to feel angry or to skip all the baby showers and first birthdays. Please share this with them. Maybe this episode spoke directly to you. Maybe it met you in all of the pain and the hurt. If you'd like to help Aaron's story reach more mamas, please leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher. As Aaron mentioned, she'd love to connect with you. She's at Timmy and Aaron on Instagram. I'll also post a link on the blog at www.thequirkums.com on the post for this episode. I know that each journey is different with its own twists and turns, so if you'd like to share your story, your perspective, please reach out. I'm at M.A. Quirkum on Instagram and Twitter, or you can go directly to my Facebook profile at facebook.com/M.A. Quirkum. If you reach out on social media, you can also use the hashtag #TheUncorkedPodcast. Next week is Thanksgiving, so no new episode. I'll be back with another Everyday Extraordinary Story on November 29th. Happy Thanksgiving, and thanks for listening.